Getting your brand message just right can make all the difference with your marketing. But what really goes into crafting a message that sticks with your customers? Today, Vasilina Valchanova, a marketing strategist, shares her brand messaging framework. In this episode of Marketing Power-Ups, you learn, first of all, why brand messaging is more than a catchy slogan. Second, Vasilina's brand messaging framework. Third, an example of a brand message that Vasilina really loves. And finally, fourth, a career power-up that has helped accelerate Vasilina's career. Are you ready? Let's go.
Marketing power-ups. Ready? Go! Here's your host, Ramley John.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. We're going to be talking about your brand messaging template. And particularly, let's talk about why you think it's like important for you, for marketers to start off here. Really, in terms of brand messaging in itself, why is it so? You have this guide on your site. I'm gonna link it in the show notes, but you talk about what is and isn't brand messaging, which I love, because like before you dig into something, like you don't just say what it is, but what isn't it. So let's start off there. What is your response to that? Like somebody say brand messaging, you know, like that could mean a lot of things to many different people, but you've created this cool template. What is it and what is it for you?
Yeah. So the way I think of messaging in general, and I've titled the template and the guide you're linking to as brand messaging specifically, but it can also work for product messaging. If you're a multi-product brand and you want to create different messaging for different brands. So essentially the way I think about messaging is that it's sort of this bridge. On the one hand side, you have your positioning, which is more the where are you competing in terms of like what market you're competing in, what are your competitors and how are you different compared to them, and what are you bringing to this very, very specific, very narrow target customer that you're trying to approach. Positioning is essentially like the philosophy behind the brand or the product. Okay. On the other hand side, you have, your typical copywriting, which is the words you have on the page itself or in the sales deck or whatever you're using to approach your customers. So this is already like the very narrow and specific wording you're actually using. And messaging sort of falls in between these two and bridges them, because it gives you, it's not so much about how you're saying things as with copywriting, but it's more about what you want to say. So what are these four or five different key messages, as it were, that you want to stay in the mind of your customer once they've seen your page or they've left the sales demo or whatever it is. So it's sort of this bridge between the two, which makes sure that your copywriting is not just going to be cool and funky and interesting sounding, but it's actually going to convey these key messages that you have identified already. And it will also keep your copywriting aligned, so you don't just, you know, go in all sorts of different direction just because, you know, you have this blank space on the page that needs filling.
That makes sense. It's almost like what I heard is really, it's the message that you want to, like, after the audience or the visitor, your website visitor has come and, like, taken your information, it's what you want them to take away and, like, recall. It's what exactly I heard from you. Like, it's exactly, would you say that's exactly what that is?
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of like, what isn't it, like, you know, it can get confusing. What are some stuff that, you know, oh, it's actually not that. Maybe one of them is like, oh, it's just the stuff on your copy. But what I'm hearing is that it's beyond that. It's actually the thing that ties all your whatever's on your site together, even your content, everything else.
Yeah, definitely. So messaging usually gets confused with copywriting, and this is one of the main sort of hurdles that we need to surmount with customers I usually work with. Because when we're starting to work on a messaging project and we start building this up, and I give them an example of this brand messaging, and they look at it and they immediately jump to, oh, but this word over here that doesn't necessarily fit with what we have in mind, or this phrase here is a bit clunky. I'm like, guys, just forget about this. We first need to focus on whether or not this is what we want to say, and then we can polish the actual way this will be said when we go to actually, you know, implementing that messaging on a landing page itself. So this is where the choice of words will matter. And now what we want to have is even like the most basic phraseology that you can use, like the simplest terms that you can use for your brand messaging, the better. It almost reminds me of, there's, I don't know if you follow this guy of the XKCD comics. He's like a brilliant science nerd, and he has this book called Thing Explainer, which is a brilliant book. It explains complex scientific concepts using just the, I think it was 10,000 most commonly used words in the English language. So when he's talking about like the top of a rocket, it just like the diagram of it just says this point, this needs to point up. So it's kind of similar to that. Like, we don't want you to have like flowery language or this edgy copywriting style that's going to fit your brand voice. We just want to have the facts straight and understand what are the key things that we want to say. So it's definitely not copywriting. It's not like a short slogan that you're going to put at the top of a landing page or at the end of an ad. Mm. And it's also not your brand's mission or vision. Messaging needs to be about what the customer is getting from you now, rather than what your investors bought in when you presented your general idea of your of your product. You know, like, it's not about the 10, 15, 20 year plan. It's about what's happening.
Like that. I think it's really about, you know, what is the value? What is the benefit that they're getting right now compared to what they were doing previously? I guess that leads to your brand messaging framework. You listed out on that page that before you fill out that template, there's like some key elements that the marketers need to have, the customer's desire, and also the competitor's promise. And you're really like trying to understand what is it they're getting at that moment by those two things, would you say?
Yeah. So in order to create that that messaging, you really need to understand why customers are interested in your product. And I really love the way, for example, April Dunford talks about positioning in that same sense. Like, she says, I wouldn't start a positioning project with a company until they've had a bunch of successful clients to learn from. And it's sort of the same with messaging. You need to have these, you first need to have your some initial traction. At least you need to have your idea validated, and then you need to have customers to learn from. I would generally, and like in 90% of the cases where I work with clients, it would mean that we would either survey or talk to customers directly. Or if this isn't possible, for example, in some cases where we're working on complex enterprise solutions, we wouldn't necessarily have the luxury to talk to like 15 CTOs of big companies, right? And in this case, we would talk to the people who actually talk to the target customer. So these would be the salespeople or customer success team. But in the end of the day, you need to be able to boil this down to what real life people are actually getting out of the product and what do they want to achieve with it and why do they actually like it or not. And this actually serves two purposes. First off, it means that you are really basing this off on something that's concrete and objective and not just on like assumptions that boiled up from like a 2-hour meeting. And
like that.
Then also for me as an external consultant, it also means that when I present the brand messaging to the client, I can also say, this isn't just, you know, my opinion, man. Mm. Like, it's something that came out of real discussions, and it's based on what customers are actually saying or what they have said to your team. So it also facilitates that buying within the company, because sometimes the founders would be looking at the long-term vision, and when they don't see that reflected in the messaging, they will feel, you know, almost cheated from this project. They'll be like, oh, but you're dumbing down the idea that we have. Like, you're making it sound like so much less than what we want it to be in the future. I'm like, no, like, people want to know what you're giving them now rather than what you plan to give them in the future, you know. And having that, again, bring this back to your original question, having that clear understanding why customers are coming to you for a solution means that you can much more easily convince new people to actually try your solution as well.
Yeah. It's essentially like trying to find out what's working with your best customers so that you can repeat that same ingredient or process or recipe so that you can get more of that same customer over and over again, and really understanding that itself. That's super cool. Thank you for sharing that. Let's jump into your template, the brand messaging framework. What are some elements that you need? You shared a few elements there as people fill that out. Can you talk about some of the elements that's involved in that framework?
So what we have in the framework are some parts that are more or less, or rather will always be for internal purposes only. Mm. And this is where your market category frame of reference comes in. So what market are you competing in, essentially, and the competitive alternatives that people usually look at and how you can differentiate from them when it comes to a specific, you know, potential customer discussion, or even like if you're not, if you don't have a sales team where you talk to a customer directly, you may want to have that reflected in some shape or form on the site. And these two elements, they come from April Dumfries' positioning framework. So it's nothing that I can take credit for. But I really feel that it's helpful to have that concept of what's the market we're competing in. And sometimes it feels that this is so basic that we don't want to think about it, or even like don't feel that it's worth mentioning. But oftentimes it would require an additional discussion. For example, I'm currently working with a client where we have this discussion on how to name the thing that they're selling. And I'm under NDA, so I'll need to keep this very, very high level. But essentially, they have a vision of what they want to bring into the market and how that's different. And at the same time, when we were doing the research, we were hearing different words from their existing customers. So what we ended up doing is, in the market category frame of reference, in the format, we typed in the actual phrase that customers are using to look for a solution in this moment, and by extension coming to them through this same key phrase. And what came out of it was that, yeah, we want to position this in a bit of a different way, or rather we want to talk how we build up on top of that existing category, but we need to start with that existing category, and we need to acknowledge that this is what people are actually looking for, and you can't just, you know, go about saying what you want to say. You need to listen to what people are looking for and what are the answers they're looking for, really.
I like that. And that's important, because sometimes maybe it's marketers, maybe it's the founders, they try to make up a new word or a new category so that they're like, oh, we're the best here. But it just creates confusion in people's mind. I remember, you know, I'm trying to think of a term right now that's made up. It's like, wow, I don't understand what that means. Like revenue acceleration platform. I remember seeing that one time, and I don't want to call the company out because I don't remember it. But I remember just like, what is that? I understand accelerating revenue, but like, what the heck?
That, Yeah, exactly. And just don't get me started on category creation. I think this trend has like subsided a bit now, but after, you know, like I feel that no, you know, conference or webinar or podcast I looked at or listened to in the past bunch of years could go without mentioning Drift and the way they did conversational marketing, and everyone was trying to do that. But at the end of the day, if you're confusing the customer, then it's just like not in anyone's, you know, and no one is standing to gain from this. And I really love, I just recently read the original positioning book by Al Reese and Jack Trout. And one thing that struck sort of a chord with me was the fact that they say this is all about creating meaning from connections that are already in the mind of your customer. And the biggest issue we usually face is that this is about simplifying things down to what's already in the mind of the customer. And as human beings, we feel that something that's simple is too simplistic, and we crave some complexity, or we want to add complexity to it. And this is exactly what positioning is not about. And it's in the same vein of thought, messaging is not about, you know, confusing your reader into like believing that there's a new category. It's about telling them, oh, we're actually in this category you're already looking for, but we're better in this and that way compared to the alternatives that are out there.
That's so such a powerful thing you just said there. I think often maybe, you know, we think that the way we sell is making it sound like we're smarter. You know, that is important. But like there's a point where you sounding smart becomes confusing. I was like, I have no idea. You have to speak. This is why I love this process that you're talking about. It's like you using the words of your customer rather than using words that you wish that you use so that you can sound like that you're making up something new, that you're cutting edge or something like that. But it's essentially like, hey, what do your customers already use? Talk about how do they describe your product and what is the value that they're talking about there, so that's important for you to say it that way. You shared that example with that particular product. Is there any other examples that you can share? You know, barring the, you know, obviously there's DNA, NDA that potentially you might have, but if you, you know, this filled out for a company.
I think that the one thing that almost always comes up is when we're looking at the alternatives, which is actually the next component of the framework. I feel that when we start initially discussing alternatives, first off, there's going to be 20 different brand names that people just throw at the wall. And then the other common scenario would be to just focus on direct competitors alone. And what I usually try to do is sort of expand that understanding of what an alternative actually is, because it's not about just another tool or another platform. It can be even just, you know, doing nothing about this problem that your solution is solving. Maybe some customers are fine with, you know, feeling that constant searing pain that in your mind should drive them to try your product, but maybe they just don't see it that way. Or the other case could be, you know, we're just gonna throw warm bodies at the problem, and we're gonna hire more people to actually do this thing the hard way. And this is an alternative to doing it the easy way with your solution. The third one in that category that always comes up is just using something that's already existing and that's already out there. And in this case, an example that comes up, before going freelance, I was an in-house marketer for a resume building app. And what we were trying to do is, you know, we were keeping a really close eye at the competitors in the market. And this was a category that was booming at the time. And we were like, oh, this competitor added this feature and this competitor added that feature. But at the same time, what came out of customer interviews and of, you know, surveys we were doing during onboarding, it turned out that like literally 95% of people were just using Microsoft Word to do their resumes. So it wasn't wow. about showing people we're better than all the other, you know, specialized resume builders out there. It's about showing people that we're better than Microsoft Word.
It's so good. You know, I was like, oh, we're better than Microsoft Word. And that's probably an easier comparison because people understand Microsoft Word. They've used it for the resume. And it's like now you can tailor a message around that rather than,
exactly.
oh, look at X, Y, and Z. You might actually be pushing them to try those other ones out, or they're already yeah. looking at it rather than, you know, making sure that you're communicating how you're better than Microsoft Word itself.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. So you got the alternatives there. And then in terms of the other elements, what are some of the other elements in that that framework?
Yeah, so there's two other components to the framework. One is the overall brand messaging or product messaging, but that's actually the result of the final fourth component, which are the key pillars. I'm calling this key pillars, and it's similar to what some people call benefits or value, or, you know, even sometimes it gets a bit conflated with desired outcomes for the customer. So there's a lot of wording out there in the marketing world because, you know, we as marketers love to complicate our lives, and we don't have like standardized language around anything. But what I mean when I'm talking about key pillars is a combination of different, this can be features, it can be your business practices, your pricing or business model. It can be a bunch of different elements that come together to provide some type of value for the customer. And I know that's very high level, so I can give you an example here. If we're thinking about Slack, let's say, their whole messaging currently is about increasing speed. And this happens in a bunch of different ways. On the one hand side, it's increasing speed by bringing all the information together. On the other hand side, it's about building speed through different automations. So these are examples of product features. If we're thinking about something beyond product features, which is what most product marketers would naturally go after, you can think about a pricing model as an element that goes into these pillars. So, for example, I have clients who are competing against alternatives, which have at the start, what looks like very lucrative pricing for their clients, but as the company grows, because they're billing based on usage, the solution gets really, really expensive. So what we included in the messaging was more information about the pricing structure, not so much the actual price itself in terms of, you know, dollars and cents, but about what we are charging you for and how that actually is designed to help growing companies and bigger companies, which was our key target market, rather than smaller players who are maybe just starting out and benefit from a different pricing model. So this is how this can be part of it. Or if you're thinking about, you know, services businesses, oftentimes what we'd include here would be the way they are actually doing business. So some proprietary approaches they'd use, or how many people are involved in a single account to provide better service, or anything else for that matter that's actually leading to particular value for the customer. And the way this is structured is that we start off by asking sort of like the simplest questions, which are, what do customers value in the product itself? And you'll start hearing different bits and pieces if you're doing customer interviews or if you're conducting like some other form of research. You would hear, for example, these three features that come up time and time again. And then when you ask the follow-up question, like, what does that enable you to do? Where is that, you know, important to you? You hear what's the actual value that this feature brings. And you listen for these sort of value type phrases and you hear something, let's say we're often hearing about how this allows people more freedom to conduct business the way they're accustomed to. So that's a point where, you know, the flexibility of our product is helping, you know, people implement it in their existing workflow without need of a change. So that may be a big value point for a product. And then you sort of reverse engineer it. And when you look at this category of value that comes up again and again, you're like, okay, so what are the different features, business capabilities, and so on that actually enable customers to receive that value? And this is how you sort of, you first go broad to hear about the different ways the product creates value. And then you narrow that down and you say, for this specific type of value, what are the features we have that are helping with
it? I love that. You're like really mapping out, you know, the capabilities of the product to the desires and the value that the customers are really looking for with that. Thank you so much for sharing this. I'm going to link this in the show notes and description once again. I want to shift gears and actually talk about career power-ups. These are things that's helped you with your particular career. You've been a digital marketing strategist and educator for more than a decade, actually, if you're, you know, checking out your LinkedIn. But curious, what's a career power-up that's helped you accelerate your career throughout this journey that you've had so far?
So there are two that I want to talk to, and one, I fear it's going to be nothing new, because as a listener to the podcast, I've heard almost every marketer out there mention it again and again, and it's the network you build and the people you actually connect with. So I actually came across that power pretty late in my career, just in terms of like the marketing landscape in my home country of Bulgaria isn't that well developed. So as I started growing in my role, I needed more connections and I needed more people to talk to who were in the same position and who were working on the same problems. And finding online communities out there where marketers gather and where you can talk to people, this is one of the best hacks for, you know, on the one hand side, building up skills and learning new things. But on the other, more human side of it, it's about feeling you're not, you know, alone in that journey and that you're not a complete screw up for not being able to, you know, figure this out. You gradually start seeing that everyone has the same problems and is struggling in much the same ways. And having that sense of community is really key. And the other thing which I think has helped a lot is I have this rule where when I read something that's really interesting and really curious, I try to link it to a specific action step that I can put on my to-do list. So I read a ton of stuff. I go through a bajillion different courses every year to level up, but just learning without implementing what you learn doesn't really serve any purpose. Anytime I'd read something curious or find like practice that I haven't tested before, I'm going to figure out a way to actually do it in real life and try to learn by doing rather than just, you know, consuming
content. I love that. That's really, you know, the first one resonates with me so much. The power of community and like connecting with folks. And this is why, you know, that's the reason why I'm here. There's a lot of people that's helped me get to where I am today. So appreciate you sharing that. That's actually how we met. I'm not sure, you know, I actually come across your work previously. A lot of my book in product-led onboarding, this part there about jobs to be done, I came across your article around this. So Bazzi, I'm not sure. I think I messaged this to you on LinkedIn once, but like that part was inspired by your writing. And we met at Caitlin Burgoyne and Neil O'Grady's course. I think I saw you. It's like, oh, I know that person. I know that name. I've seen that. Actually, I'm not sure if you know, but there's a few links that in product-led onboarding that goes to that specific article. I mentioned that there. So
yeah,
I'm gonna link it in the show notes. For people who are not familiar with that jobs to be done article interview, jobs to be done style interview that you have yourself.
That's great. Yeah, I'm 100% in love with jobs to be done as an approach. And it's basically in some shape or form present in any customer research idea. So yeah, big thumbs up there. And again, like it's so great to finally, you know, see each other face to face after, you know, being on the course together, right, then exchanging messages. I've been following the podcast for a really long while. So yeah.
Awesome. One final question. Where can people find out more about you and your work? I'm going to link your website, that brand messaging template and framework, your LinkedIn. I think that's probably where you want to send them as well. Is there anywhere else you want people to go to check out your work online?
Yeah, LinkedIn is the best place to connect with me. And if you do, just shoot me a message that you listen to this podcast, what you liked and what you didn't like about it. And yeah, other than my site and LinkedIn, I have a newsletter, which I try to keep up to a regular, you know, schedule. And every week I send out 5 resources that I've come across during the week that I think will help marketers and anyone interested in implementing marketing practices in their work. So if you guys are curious, just head to my website and you'll also see the newsletter section there too.
If you enjoyed this episode, you'd love the Marketing Power-Ups newsletter. I share the actionable takeaways and break down the frameworks of world-class marketers. Go to marketingpowerups.com to subscribe and you'll instantly unlock the 3 best frameworks that top marketers use to hit their KPIs consistently and wow their colleagues. I want to say thank you to you for listening, and please like and follow Marketing Powerups on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you feel extra generous, kindly leave a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And leave a comment on YouTube. Goes a long way in others finding out about Marketing Powerups. Thanks to Mary Sullivan for creating the artwork and design. And thank you to Faisal Kaigo for editing the intro video. And of course, thank you for listening. That's all for now. Have a powered up day.
Marketing Power-Ups. Until the next episode.